Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, we are holding in, we just want to get your pages in order. In the white Rashi pages, we are on the one page that does not have page numbers. I think it's like the third or fourth page, so you'll find it there. And in your Ramban sheets, you could flip to page 55. Your blue Ramban sheets, page 55, and hopefully that'll get us all set up and ready to go. Okay, the blue Ramban is 55. And your white Rashi, you have the one page that does not have page numbers. It got cut off on top, and that's the one that you're looking for. Okay, where we got to in our story yesterday, we got to the moment in which Yaakov approaches his father. He sneaks in. He is dressed, of course, in his brother's clothing. He has the goat skin on his arms and on the back of his neck, and he provides him with the food. He asks his father to sit up, please, and to eat. And they have a little bit of a dialogue. His father asks him who he is. What are you missing?
Blue and white.
Oh, blue and white, perfect for today. Kachol velavon.
What is that, sir?
today is blue and white
day. Did I not come soon enough?
No, you're good. You're good. You're good.
I came at 11 o'clock for class.
The watch was there.
Okay. It's fine.
Is that it? There's no more up there?
We don't have enough. Some people, I think.
Oh, I have one upstairs. I took a copy to my office.
We'll share it.
I'm the culprit.
I'm sharing.
Okay. Okay, take two. So what we got up to last week, we got up to the part of the story. Yaakov comes into his father. He's all dressed up in his brother's clothing. He's got the skin on the back of his neck and on his arms. He presents him with the food, and they have a little bit of a dialogue. Who are you? He says, it is I, Esav, your firstborn. As we learn, in which he's trying to toe the line of being deceitful, yet being as honest as he possibly can. I've done what you have told me, like many other times I have done things that you have told me. He said, please take and eat from that which I have brought you. His father asks him, how did it happen that you got here so fast? And he says, because your God has arranged it for me. And on that, Yitzhak's eyebrows are raised, red flags go up, and he says, you're using the name of God? That's odd. Who are you, my son? Come here and let me feel you. At which point he says, they are the hands of Esav, but the voice is the voice of Yaakov. He says it the other way, and the voice is the voice of Yaakov, the hands are the hands of Esav. And we learned last week, quick review, that what tipped him off was the name of God. As the Ramban and Rashi and Maharal quoted, Esav didn't use the name of God. But the Ramban, who spoke, and we saw explained by the Maharal, so why did he think that was, if he knew that his son Esav never used the name of God, why did he think that Esav was such a righteous individual? Why was he fooled? Shouldn't that have tipped him off that only Yaakov ever says, thank God, Baruch Hashem, all day long? So we learned last week, because Yitzhak was of the approach of serving out of awe or fear, as opposed to Avraham, who served out of love. When you serve out of love, you want to bring close, and when you serve out of fear, you need to keep your distance. So Yaakov, who used the name of God, Yitzhak himself wouldn't have done so. Yitzhak, who served out of fear, would have refrained from doing so. He would have been cautious. He would not have wanted to be loose with the name of God, out of fear that he's not concentrating correctly, he's not saying it appropriately, he's not in the right mind frame. So he actually thought, when he heard that Esav did not, that's like me. He's serving God out of the same approach that I have, which is one more out of fear than out of love, and therefore he understood from Esav's lack of the usage of the name of God that it was actually in line with his own personal sense of service, which is why he connected with him. As opposed to Yaakov, I was just mentioning to somebody this week how if parents have multiple children, it's not uncommon that they would connect with one of them more than another. Because just like if you were to take a handful of people and say, which one of these people will you be most friendly with? Well, they're different personality styles. I have a personality type, and right? These people are different. I will connect with a certain personality type more than others. It's just natural that way. Well, what happens if you took those same five people who, if they were just colleagues of yours, based only on their personalities, you would connect with one more than another, and then you took a handful of your own children, and they have the same variation of personality types. So you might love them all the same, but some you do really well with, and others you don't do so. You connect with those which are more similar to you, and in God's great wisdom, He gave us various different personality types to deal with. So Yitzchak here, just as a brief parenthetical comment, sees in Esav more of himself. He sees a child who serves out of that awe, fear element, and doesn't use God's name, and therefore connected to him, whereas Yaakov did. But now that he hears Yaakov coming in and saying, your God arranged it for me, so his interest is piqued. He feels him, and he says the famous line, your voice is the voice of Yaakov, your hands are the hands of Esav, which we understood from Rashi. This is the last thing that we did last week. When we say the voice of Yaakov, didn't mean the actual voice, but it meant the tone. The tone is Yaakov's voice, Rashi said. He spoke in a kind, in a polite manner, as opposed to Esav, who comes in and speaks in a demanding way of, father needs to, you know, come up and eat. So Yaakov's supplicating tone is the voice of Yaakov, as opposed to the antagonistic tone of Esav. And we spoke last week about how when we speak about having a Jewish voice, it doesn't mean the sound, the tune, the tone, the there's a way of speaking. That's the voice of Yaakov.
His manner.
The manner of speaking, the choice of words. It's not the sound of the voice, but it's the supplicating kind tone. And as we mentioned last week, and with this we'll conclude our review from last week, very often when, if you were to listen to somebody speak in a different language, you would have no idea what they're saying, but you would hear snippets of the recordings of what they're saying, you can right away tell whether or not they're speaking in a nice tone, they're angry, are they being demanding. There's just, you can hear that without even having a clue what's being said. And it's very clear, you know, the psychologist has done all sorts of studies with babies way before they have any sense of understanding of words, and they respond very clearly to how they're being spoken to by their parents, because there's just a tone that's used. Certainly it's true with animals who don't have the capacity for language that we do, and you know, I don't have any pets. But it seems very clear to me from people that do that they seem to expect different behavior when they say, like, sit down, like where it's all in the tone that they're using, that they're expecting some type of response. And it's very true. We respond to that. So the voice of Yaakov is the tone of supplication, is the tone of kindness, is the tone of understanding and kindness, as opposed to the hands of Esav. Okay, that's where we got up to. Let us continue in verse 23. Continues our story, says the Chumash, V'lo hikiro, Yitzchak did not recognize him, ki hoyu yodav, ki dei Esav achiv, si'iros, because his hands were hairy, like the hands of Esav, his brother, vayivarcheyu, and he blessed him. So that the Torah has a specific verse here in verse 23. I'm going to be starting in your white sheets for Rashi. We'll be switching back to the blue Ramban sheets in a moment, but if you just want to follow me in the white ones for now. So Yitzchak feels his son. He makes this declaration of the hands are the hands of Esav, whereas the voice is the voice of Yaakov. And the Torah tells us he didn't recognize him because of the fact that he had these hairy hands, just like his brother Esav, and therefore he blessed him. Now this is an important statement in that the Torah is now stating as a fact that at this point in the story, Yitzchak does not know whom he is speaking to. He still believes, after hearing the voice, after having the conversation, after feeling his arms, he is still convinced that he is speaking with his son Esav, vayivarcheyu, and therefore he blessed him. Chavdala 24, vayoymer, ata ze bini Esav, and he said, you are indeed my son Esav, vayomer ani. So that he makes it as a statement, I've put you through the test, I have felt you, you are indeed my son Esav. And Yaakov responds, ani, I am. Now again, Rashi makes a comment here similar to what he's made two other times. Yaakov is balancing the two things that he needs to deal with. He must, per his mother's instructions, deceive his father and get the blessing, and he needs to do so in as honest way as possible. Says Rashi in the bottom of your page in 24, Vayomer Ani, he said, I am. He did not say, Ani Esav. He did not say, yes, I am Esav. He simply said, I am. Now, I am, again, and this is exactly the same thing that we've seen elsewhere, in context, how was Yitzchak to understand the phrase, Ani, I am? Of course, he was to understand it to mean, I am Esav, like you asked me. But in a vacuum, are the words that exited his mouth a lie? So again, no, he's towing the line. He didn't say a lie. He didn't say, I am Esav. He said, I am. Was the implication clearly to deceive? Yes. That's what he needed to do. That was his agenda and his goal. Did he do it in a way that a word of lie did not exit his mouth? Also yes. And we see three times in the story, that's Yaakov's balance of, I need to respond in a way that will allow for something to come out, yet not to do it in a way that is an overt lie. Continues the Torah. 25. Ayomir hagisholi v'oichlo mitzein v'ni. Yitzchak says, please come serve me and let me eat of my son's game. Leman tivarechecha nafshi, in order that my soul may bless you. And again, we're not going to be focused on this right now, but we'll note again the language of my soul will bless you comes up several times in the story. Here again, in Yitzchak's request, bring forth the food, thereby letting my soul bless you. Vayageshlo. So he approached, he served him, vayoichal, and he ate, vayovi lo yayin vayesh, and he brought him wine and he drank. Now, I want to point out here the lack of comment. Both Rashi and Ramban, neither of whom are troubled by the comment that we made in this story where the wine is introduced at this point. It was not mentioned at any point earlier when Yitzchak said, originally to his son Esav, go out, I'd like to bless you before I die, go and hunt me and bring me something to eat. He doesn't mention it. When Rivka tells her son Yaakov about what happened, and she says, go to the flock, bring me some goats, I'll prepare them, she doesn't mention it. When she puts in his hand the materials, remember we had that passive-active element, who's doing the actions? Rivka, the mother, is putting in Yaakov's hands the clothing, the food, and sends him in. It's not mentioned. And now when Yaakov is in the tent with his father and goes through this whole test with the feeling and the whole conversation, and now Yitzchak says, good, everything is in order, bring me the food, please, and let me eat, the Torah then adds, and Yaakov went and got wine and gave him to drink. Neither Rashi nor the Ramban are troubled by that. They have nothing to say on it. I add it to our list of questions after we go through Rashi and Ramban. Hopefully we'll tie in some loose ends. We'll see if somebody will comment on. Again, I'll phrase the question the way we did our first go-around. If it doesn't matter, if there's nothing of significance here, so then why do we need to know that?
Also, she gave him bread.
And she, right, let's add to this what we mentioned earlier, that she, Rivka, gives him bread to serve, which had not been mentioned at any point, but she gives it to him as well. It's not mentioned here either. And if it is significant, so then what's the significance of Yaakov going to get the wine and giving him to drink? Is it nothing more than the elevation of the body, soul, in order to bless? That with the wine comes a level of joy, and that would help put Yitzchak in the place that he needed to be to bless him? Or is there something else there? I do not know. I'm simply raising that as an issue. It's interesting. The Torah takes the time to tell us that there was added that he went and he brought him wine, and the Rashi and Ramban, at least, were not troubled enough to offer any explanation of that. Okay, let's move forward. Let us move forward. The bulk of their comments are going to come in the next couple of verses, so let's get there. 26, top of page 296 in your Rashi sheets. Flipping the page. On your white Rashi sheets, top of page 296. Vayomer Elov Yitzchak Aviv, and his father Isaac said to him, Gishona Ushikali Bini, draw close if you please, and kiss me, my son. So here we again have the element of the kiss. Now let's repeat a comment that the Ramban had made earlier. What is the kiss? What's the element of the kiss? It's a form of endearment between father and son. Well, we're going to see the whole concept of the eating. I'm sure we'll tie that back into the wine. And now with the kissing is that in order for there to be a connection between father and son, for the blessing to be given in its full fervor, that connection is there. So that Yitzchak says, I've had what to eat. I've had some wine to drink. Draw close and kiss me, my son. Now again, we pointed out, if we were writing this, I think I would have written, I don't know if you can tell me if you agree, if I would have said, come close, and I would have said, and let me kiss you. Excellent, right? Let me kiss you. That's what Yaakov was afraid of. When Yaakov said to his mother, this plan is going to fail, it's a great idea, Mom, but I'm going to get caught, it's because my father's going to want to, he's going to want to kiss, he's going to want to be close. And here, it's the opposite, in which Yitzchak says to his son, come close, ushkali bini, and kiss me. My son, again, I raise it as an issue. Rashi and Ramban do not comment on it. Vayigash vayishaklo. So he drew close and he kissed him. Vayorach es reyach begadol vayivarchehu. And he, Yitzchak, smelled the fragrance of his garments and he blessed him. Now, this we're going to have a lot of comments. Rashi and Ramban are going to talk about this. So Yaakov comes in, he comes close. He kisses his father, and the Torah tells us that Yitzchak now smells the garments of Yaakov. Now, on a simple level, well, not on a simple level, the Torah told us whose garments is he wearing?
Esav.
He's wearing Esav's clothing. Yitzchak, Rivka, his mother, put him in the big day hachamudos, those special dear, beloved clothing, which Rashi Chazal told us had been traced back from Nimrod to Avram to Adam Arishon. He smells the smell of his clothing, and he blesses him. Vayomer re'ei si reyach b'ni k'reyach soda asher bercho Hashem. The fragrance of my son is like the fragrance of a field which Hashem had blessed. Very odd, not simply understood phrase. So let's try to put that into simple English. Yaakov comes close and kisses him. And the Torah tells us two things. Number one, Yitzchak smells something. He smelled the fragrance of his garments and blessed him. That's without any words. He smelled something and blessed him. And then when he begins to talk, he says, now this is the beginning of the blessing. If you look on the English side of the words here in the Chumash, in the verses, you'll see a dash in between verses 27 and 28. So that the blessing is going to begin in verse 28. Which we'll get to, Mr. Hashem, in a few moments. The blessing begins, may God give you of the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth and abundant grain and wine. The quote in which Yitzchak begins to speak the blessings is our verse. How do the blessings begin with what phrase? See, the fragrance of my son is like the fragrance of the field which Hashem has blessed. You smell like a field that has been blessed by God. And with that, he opens the blessings. Very odd. What does that mean? What is a field that's been blessed by God smell like? That he would say, ah, you smell like that. You smell like a field that has been blessed by God. Let's take a look at Rashi and Ramban. They'll have what to say. I hope it will be satisfying. What I mean to say is that it's so shrouded in mystery that even after they tell us part of it, we're still, I have a feeling, going to be left with, don't fully get the meaning of that, which is okay. That's how it goes. The Torah is much deeper than most of our abilities to grasp. But let's at least get started with what we have here. All right, let's take a look. Let's start with verse 27. Says Rashi, Vayorach v'goyim, in the bottom of page 296, he smelled. But is it not true, Rashi asks, that there is no smell worse than the hair of goats? 1 second, says Rashi. What is he wearing? He's wearing two things. He's wearing Esav's clothing, and then he's decked out in goat hair on his arms and on the back of the neck, says Rashi. Now you or I may never have been on a farm where they just slaughtered a goat, and we've had goat hair lying around. Rashi says, I have been. That does not smell very pleasant. Recently slaughtered goat hair. Says Rashi, how can he say that there's this odor, it's so good, that you came in with? Says Rashi, but this teaches us, so the sages say, shenichnasim oreach gan Eden, that the fragrance of the Garden of Eden came in with him. Now again, remember when we learned in Rashi, we've seen that there are many different levels of interpretation, what we call pardes, pay for pshat, and then remez, and sod, and hint, and then deeper meanings. So the sages look at this, and they see that Yaakov comes close. Now already, he's sort of been there already, they've had this conversation, he's been felt and touched, and then his father says, come closer, and actually kiss me. And when that happens, he gets a whiff and he says, that's like the fragrance of a garden that's been blessed by God. What does that smell like? And Rashi says, forget that. He's wearing goat hair. So the sages see that this was a spiritual smell. Now a smell is anyway one of the senses that teeters on the border of what we like to call this worldly and next worldly. Meaning the this worldly things are things that are very tangible, things that you can touch and feel. And smell, like God breathes into the nostril of man the breath of life. Why the nostril? Because the nose, representing the element of smell, is something which you can't put your hands on. It's something which is invisible to the naked eye, but it's something real. Something that I can sense, but you can't bottle it. You can't put your hands on it. You can't put it somewhere. It's just there. So there's a smell of Gan Eden. There's a smell of the Garden of Eden. I can't tell you what that smells like, but I can tell you that the sages see that Yitzchak recognized it. That he recognized a spiritual smell. I'm using words, and I'm acknowledging that I don't fully understand what they mean, but those are the words. He smelled a spiritual smell. That he wasn't smelling the goat hair, and he wasn't smelling the clothing upon Yitzchak, Yaakov, which was really his brother's clothing. There was something about him, a spiritual sense, and the same as we would say, sometimes people who are on a spiritual level exude a light. It's also as if they exude a smell. And Yitzchak perceives that and sees something about this. Now again, who does he think this is? He thinks this is Esav. So this is all part of one of the big questions that we asked in the beginning as to what does he really think about his son. He really thinks his son is righteous because he now has this smell which he himself recognizes as the smell of Gan Eden, and he's convinced still that this is his son Esav in front of him. Now let's just continue one more comment in Rashi. We'll see the Ramban. And what does it smell like? Like the fragrance of a field which Hashem had blessed. And we'll have here a Kabbalistic comment that Rashi makes, that it had a good smell, meaning that God had given it capital H, that he gave it a good smell, this field which had been blessed. And what kind of field is that? A field of tapuchim, of apples. So do the rabbis of blessed memory explain it, that a field of apples. Now you'll see in note 4, I'm just sort of showing why I don't need to explain this to you. In verse 4 you'll see a note 4 on the bottom that this could allude to the Garden of Eden, which is called the field of apples in Kabbalistic terminology. And the Zohar comments on a verse that the Garden of Eden came in with to Isaac with Jacob, for it is a field of holy apples. Now if you'd like to know what in the world does the Garden of Eden have to do apples and a field of apples, it's a good question. It's a Kabbalistic question, so I'm not going to give you an answer. I will just give you a teaser. In the very first Shema Koleinu that we printed, if you remember Rosh Hashanah time, we print a beautiful booklet of articles on Rosh Hashanah time. The very first booklet that we printed, Rabbi Yoel Spatz, one of the members of our community, wrote an essay on the connection between the Esrog and the apple, and where we find them throughout Jewish literature, a connection between them. So I can give you, I'll pass it out if you like next week. We're not going to get into it today. We'll leave it as, in Kabbalistic literature, Gan Eden is referred to as a field of tapuchim, of apples. So the field that was blessed by God would be this field of apples. And Yitzchak senses that when Yaakov walks in. Now, I think for our purposes, we'll leave it at that. I'm okay and comfortable leaving it as, I don't know what this means. That's the reality. But that what we will take from this is that Yitzchak, before he blesses his son, this is what will be relevant to us, is in what state? He is in a state of having eaten of the food of his son. He's had what to drink, and now he gets a whiff of what he recognizes as literally the presence of the Garden of Eden. Now, again, I'm leaving aside the details of why is it referred to as apples and what does it really smell like. It's irrelevant to me right now. What is relevant is that where is Yitzchak? spiritually, physically, what state is he in as he's about to bestow this blessing? He literally feels himself in the Garden of Eden in the presence of his son. And he has that smell. And again, the words and the meaning is beyond our purposes. That's where he is. If you tell him that's your son Esav, he says, I know this is my son Esav. My son Esav brings with him this. Brings with him that smell, brings with him that sense, that position of being, so to speak, in the Garden of Eden. Okay, let's leave it at that. Let's take a look at his blessings, and Rashi and Rabban have a lot to say on the actual blessings. So far, so good?
Sure.
I mean, sure, yeah, apples, Esrog, whatever. You know that Adam and Eve did not eat from an apple, right?
No, no, no.
Okay, just making sure. They didn't.
I thought we all knew that.
Yeah. No, they didn't. Right? The Gemara has three comments as to what fruit they actually ate from. One was a kernel of wheat. One was a fig. And I think the other one actually is the esrog, if I remember correctly, the third opinion. But no, none of the opinions say that it was an apple.
Why everyone eat apples.
Yeah.
The apple got a bad rap for some reason.
Yeah. I don't know. Some Christian artist probably put it into some early drawing and that was the end of it. Okay, we can look into that. Where did the apple come from? It continues. Let's see the actual blessing. Verse 28. So now, what's the blessing? And may God, and there's a vav there, and may God give you of the dew of the heavens and of the fatness of the earth, Verov Dogon Visirosh, and abundant grain and wine. Let's read the next verse to get the entire conclusion of his entire blessing. It's a three verse blessing. It begins in the verse we just concluded, verse 27, that see, the fragrance of my son is like the fragrance of a field of gems blessed. That was an actual statement that he made. Then he goes, may God give you of the dew of the heavens, the fatness of the earth, and abundant grain and wine. We could, I guess, break that down into three components: dew, fat, and produce, grain and wine. I don't know, let's put grain and wine together as specifics of produce, grain, wine, produce, as opposed to fatness of the earth, which is the general blessing, and dew of the heaven. And then in verse 29, people will serve you and regimes will prostrate themselves to you. We have this element of being served both by individual peoples, although it sounds like nations, like peoples of nations will serve you, and regimes will prostrate themselves to you. So that would seem to be a position of you will become a world leader, that nations and regimes will subjugate themselves before you. And then we have on an individual level within the family, Hevi Gvir La'achecha, be a lord to your brothers, and your mother's sons will prostrate themselves to you. Again, a double phrase, just like we had on the first half of the verse, that nations and peoples will both somehow serve you, prostrate themselves before you. And then within the family, a double phrase of, you'll be a lord to your brothers, and your mother's sons, who are also your brothers, will prostrate themselves to you. So we have regimes prostrating themselves to you, your brothers will prostrate themselves to you, you'll be a lord to your brothers, and then the final element, may those who curse you be cursed, and those who bless you be blessed. So three elements to the second verse. We have the world level, that you'll be a world power, regimes and nations will prostrate and serve you. We have a family level, your brothers, mothers, sons will serve and prostrate to you. And then the third level of those who curse you will be cursed and those who bless you will be blessed. So three elements to the first part of the blessing: dew, fat, produce, grain and wine. And then three elements to your, I guess, just general standing in the world, that you'll have nations and regimes will subjugate themselves to you. Two, your family will subjugate themselves to you, you'll be a lord over them. And three, anyone who dares curse you will be cursed, and anyone who blesses you will be blessed. So it's a pretty comprehensive blessing, except there's one major part missing, which is?
The land.
Excellent. Right? We don't have the blessing of the land of Israel. We don't have the blessing of you and your children will inherit the land. That we've seen has been traced from Avram. We saw that many times. Avraham is given that blessing. Yitzchak is given that blessing. And eventually Yaakov will be given that blessing, but it's not here. It's not included in this blessing. There's dew and fatness of the earth and grain and wine, but we do not have, and the land that God has promised to Avraham and to myself for our children to inherit forever, that is not included in here. Of note, and we will continue to discuss. So let's take a look at Harashi, what he has to say on this blessing. Verse 28, Vayitein l'cho ha'elokim. So the first comment that Rashi has is troubled by the vav, the opening and of this blessing, because really this seems to be the beginning of the blessing, that God should give you the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth. Why does it say, and God should give you the fatness and the dew? That's the opening line, so to speak. So says Rashi, may he give and give again. So the first comment is what it means is that vav of v'yitein l'cha, and God should give you the dew and the fatness, is that it should be a repetitive, constant type of blessing. It should be given to you now, and then it should be given again and again and always, that you should receive such blessing. According to its simple meaning, says Rashi, it refers back to the preceding topic, meaning the beginning of Yitzchak's statement was, see, the fragrance of my son is like the fragrance of the field that God has blessed. And in addition to that, he should continue to bless you with the dew and the fatness. So that the vav, on a simple level, doesn't mean that you should be blessed and blessed again. And again, it just means, just like I said, that you were blessed clearly with the fragrance of the field that God has blessed, and you should be blessed as well with the dew and the fatness. And then Rashi comments, and there are many Agadic Midrashim which interpret this verse in many aspects, which we will leave for now, but it's important to be aware of. The sages see in this not simple type of blessing, and they have many comments to make on an Agadic level, and we will leave that aside for now. Now, next comment that Rashi makes, let's set it up. God, as we know, if you're reading it on the English side, you would have missed this, and that's why we're going to take a look for a second on the Hebrew side. And then on its comment, there are many different names that God has and that the Torah uses for God. If we were to take the two primary ones, we would have the name Elohim, and the name which we would call the name of Hashem, the Yud and the He, followed by the Vav and the He. They both represent different attributes of God. One is the attribute of mercy, and one is the attribute of judgment. Excellent. Which one is which? Elohim is judgment. Elohim is a name which connotes judgment, justice, and din. And the name of God, the Yud and the He and the Vav and the He, that name represents more of mercy, rachamim, kindness. That is all more encompassed in that name. So if you were to have chosen, which name of God would or should Yitzchak have used in this blessing? He has just eaten of the food of his son and drank from his wine. He smells the smell of Gan Eden in front of him, and we've kissed him and prepared to give him this blessing. Which name of God would he bestow this blessing with?
Hashem.
It would have been the name Hashem. It would have been logical to have assumed so. This is a loving moment. It's a moment of blessing that God should bestow his blessings. If there was one of these two names that you would have chosen, it would have been that name of mercy more than the name of attribute of justice.
But because of who Yitzchak is, I wouldn't expect
him. Okay, so you're raising a very interesting point. But Yitzchak, as we mentioned earlier today, represents justice, exactitude. He represents fear and awe, which is fair.
I would think of him as seeing this as a natural outcome. So it's this, therefore, obviously, it's this, and then this.
Then it's an attribute of justice.
It's a cause and effect.
Okay.
From what he just said.
Yeah, so the interesting thing is, and again, I don't have a great answer for this, is the nature of blessing. This is going to be one of those big questions we're going to hopefully get back to, and you'll remind me of it. If it's all cause and effect, so what would be if he never gave the blessing? Wouldn't the cause and effect still be true? You do what you need to do, and you get whatever you're supposed to get. Where does the blessing fit into a cause and effect system?
So you're saying, does that really make it happen because he gave him the blessing?
Right, if it's cause and effect.
Belief.
So I don't have a good answer. I'm just raising that as a question. That question really stems out of, we find blessings throughout. Avraham gives blessings to Yitzchak, Yitzchak gives to Yaakov, Yaakov is going to bless his children. There's a very strong element of blessings. This story is one of the strongest in which Rivka says to herself and to her son Yaakov, the blessing that's going to be given is so powerful that whoever gets it will get it for good, and it has to be you. So go deceive your father and take it. So we see that it's powerful, and so we'll have to deal with your comment.
I would just say that one thought from what you were saying, and I don't know if it's right or not, it's just a thought, is that starting with the very beginning of Bereishis, we learn that Hashem creates the world with words,
mm-hmm.
and that words are immediately something powerful, and that giving a blessing is something that we do to imitate Hashem and create something in the world out of our words.
Okay.
Give power to it.
Yeah.
And there's the element of responsibility, because once you get this blessing, I mean, you have to believe that this is something that you have to do.
Very good. Let's see Rashi's comment. Very good. So says Rashi. So Rashi's bothered by the sages, are bothered by the word Elohim. And it seemed like it would have fit to have used God's name of Hashem more than the name Elohim in this particular instance, but that's not what Yitzchak does. He does use the name Elohim. Says Rashi in the bottom of the page, alternatively, what is meant by Yitzchak's use of Elohim? Says Rashi, to imply that it's badin, that God may God give it to you, but by law, meaning only what you deserve by the strict letter of the law. That this is Yitzchak giving the blessing exactly as Deborah was saying. Yitzchak is a man of exactitude. You get what you deserve. There's no room for mercy. There's only room for judgment and fairness. I bestow this blessing upon you that if you're deserving, you should be showered with the dew from the heaven and the fatness of the earth and abundant grain and wine. If you are deserving. Continues Rashi. Imroi lucha, if it is fitting for you, meaning you are worthy in the top of page 297, then yitain lucha, may he give it. But if not, lo yitain lucha, may he not give it to you. So that the blessing of the father to his beloved son, as he's in this state of ecstasy of having eaten of the food and the wine and the smell of Gan Eden is, but if you don't deserve it, my boy, you'll get nothing. I'm not giving you a blessing that's a freebie blessing. I'm giving you a blessing that says, if you will behave correctly, may the heavens open up the dew and the fatness and the grain and the wine, and may you rule over your brothers, and may those who curse you be cursed. But you have to take the first step. I am not giving this blessing.
I don't see where you're getting that.
From the word Elohim.
Just from that one word.
That's where the sages are getting it from. Elohim connotes the language of a God of din, of judgment. So that who should give you this blessing? The attribute of justice should give you this blessing. Which would mean to say, if you merit it, then the Elohim should say, you merit it, this is what I'm going to do, I'm going to bestow all these blessings upon you. But that if you don't merit it, then these blessings will not be there for you. Now Rashi contrasts this with what Yitzchak will eventually say to his son Esav. After the story is going to play itself out, Yaakov is going to leave, Esav is going to come in, Yitzchak is going to figure out what happened, Esav is going to plead and beg him, something, Dad, do you have for me? And Yitzchak will give him something. Says Rashi, we're going to see that the word Elohim is not there. Continues Rashi. Avala Esav, second line in, but to Esav he said, unconditionally, Mishmonei ha'aretz yihyeh moshavecha, of the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling. Now we're going to see that blessing, that's going to be the end of our story. So when Esav says, please, Abba, anything, something, yes, fine, I'll give you something, of the fatness of the earth should be your dwelling, which implies, Bein tzaddik, bein rasha. Whether you be righteous or wicked, yitain lecha, may he give it to you. So that we see here, Yitzchak uses the word Elohim in blessing his son, who he thought was Esau, but it turns out to be Yaakov. So the original blessing that he gives was given conditionally. Then when the story plays itself out, and he now knows Esau for whom he is, and he now has his son begging him for one blessing, and he says, I have nothing left to give you. I gave it all to your brother. He says, please, something. You can have the fatness of the earth. That should be your dwelling. That blessing he gives without any conditions. It's not with the word Elohim. It's not in the attribute of justice. You'll always get it whether you're righteous or whether or not you're wicked. This will be your blessing. Continues Rashi. And from this, meaning from this episode, Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon, learned that when he made the bayis, when he made the Beis HaMikdash, and arranged his prayer, there's the book of Kings, in describing the construction of the Beis HaMikdash, that Shlomo HaMelech, when he completed it, offered a prayer on the inaugural day of the Holy Temple. He wrote as follows, Yisrael, to a Jew, in referencing it to a Jew, Shehu Baal Emuna, the Jew who possesses faith, who understands that there's a Creator, who knows that the Creator has imposed certain obligations, responsibilities upon the Jew, Umastik Olav Adin, and justifies the judgment upon him, meaning the Jew can acknowledge the justice of God's judgment no matter what befalls him. He has the ability to say, if this is what befell me, it came from God and it is just. I might not understand it, and I certainly might not like it, but I can acknowledge that it is just, and will not accuse you of being unfair. The Jew again can say, I don't like this and I don't understand it, but I don't say that it's unfair, because the Jew knows there's no such thing as unfair. Unfair means ungodly. Unfair meant it's just random and I got the short end of the stick, and that's unfair. We don't have that word. We don't have that concept. We have, I don't get it. I don't like it, but it's just. Therefore, says King Solomon in his prayer, regarding the Israelites, he prayed, V'nasato li'ish, you should give to each man k'chol d'rachav, commensurate with his ways, asher teidas levavo, since you know his heart. So when he prays to the Jewish people on the inaugural day of the temple, he says to God, you should give to each man commensurate with his ways, you know his heart. You give him what's commensurate with his behavior, he will not complain that it's unjust. He will be matzik olecho asadin. He will say, you are justified in, and acknowledge your judgment in whatever befalls him. But to a stranger, when Shlomo prays on behalf of the non-Jews who will come to the temple as well to offer up their prayers, the nachri who's mechusar emuna, who is lacking in faith, who will say that things are unfair, Lefika Solomon said, Atatishmo Hashamayim v'chul, may you listen in the heavens, Va'asisa k'chol asher yikro eilecha hanochin, act upon all for which the stranger calls to you. To the Jew, about the Jew, he said, do to him according to his ways. To the non-Jew, he said to God, do to him whatever he wants. Whatever he asks for, do for him. When it comes to the Jew, he says, do to him what he deserves. Says, right, where did Shlomo get that from? That's not fair, if I could borrow that phrase. Right? So the Jews, these are our people. They should be the ones to get whatever they ask for, and to the non-Jews, whatever they deserve. But Shlomo does the opposite. Where did he get that from? Says Rashi, from our story. Because when Yitzhak eventually gives the blessing to Esav, he just says, your dwelling should be in the fatness of the earth no matter what. But to his son, but what Yaakov gets, is in the original blessing that he wanted to give was Vayitein Ho Elokim, that it should be with the attribute of justice, that in order for us to receive the blessings of heaven, those blessings of heaven come with Allah Lecha. You follow after my ways and you will receive the blessings of heaven. Let me just read it aside to conclude in Rashi. To the non-Jew, it's do whatever he calls upon you, whether he is worthy or whether he is not worthy. Give him what he prays for so that he should not accuse you of being unfair. Read the end of that first paragraph on page 297. So to the non-Jew who comes to the Beit HaMikvah, Shlomo prays, God, listen to whatever he wants and do it. Because otherwise he's going to walk out of here, your home, the Holy Temple, and he's going to say, yeah, God of the Jews, he's no different than anything else. He can't do what I ask for. So to him, God, Shlomo prays, do what they ask. Do what they ask so that they won't have the ability to say, no, I asked for it and I didn't get it. They're not going to say it's because of my own actions that I didn't deserve it. They're going to say it's because God couldn't do it. So for that, Shlomo prays, just do whatever they want. But when the Jew walks in and asks for something and doesn't get it, his response will be, I didn't deserve it. It's not in my best interest. God is just, and I don't understand it. So to that, Shlomo says, do for them commensurate with their ways. And he learned that from here, that the bracha to Yaakov is Vayitenu Elokim, may the God, the attribute of justice, bless you with these wonderful blessings when you deserve it, when you are worthy and fitting for it. And when not, you're not going to get these blessings. So there's this very fascinating combination of a blessing contingent upon your behavior. So it's cause and effect, but that the cause is your behavior. The effect would have been something good, but I'm not blessing it with more than that. That when you behave correctly, it shouldn't just be something, but it should be, everything should pour forth. The dew of the heavens, the fat of the earth, the blessings of produce, of grain and wine, and you should be worldly, powerfully powerful, you should be powerful amongst the family, those, but all of those blessings should be thrown upon you, but when you're worthy of them. And this, you know, buried within this Rashi is that beautiful idea that the Jew who is the Baal Emunah, as Rashi says, who has the understanding of faith, knows that when it doesn't work out the way that he wants, he doesn't accuse God of being unfair, but he says, I wasn't deserving, I don't understand it, I may think I was deserving, I don't get what I did for this, but I don't complain that it's unfair of God, but that it was the God's attribute of justice for reasons which I do not get and may never get. Most of the times, indeed, will never get. That is the cause of this.
Does this perhaps mean that Yitzhak always doubted Esau's behavior?
From which aspect are you saying that?
Toward God.
Because of the end, how he blesses him without God's name? When he just says whatever, you should always get it?
He thinks he's blessing Esau.
At this point, yes.
Yes. So he says to him, if you don't do right, you're not going to get the blessing.
Correct. I think that's the contingency, that even though he thought he was blessing his son Esau,
right,
the blessing that he was giving was a contingent blessing, because he thought Esau was a righteous person at that point, whom he thought he was blessing, that the blessings even to the righteous are contingent upon continued righteous behavior. We see that often throughout the Avos. Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, all have instances in the Chumash in which they say, why were they afraid of something befalling them or another? Because they felt, maybe my behavior isn't the way that it used to be. So even though I was once blessed, maybe I've lost the protection of that blessing because my behavior has fallen out of favor. And we find that concept often in Sefer Bereishis, the combination of blessings that are contingent upon our behavior. We make the first move, and God promises if you make that first move, I'll shower you with blessings. You won't have to worry about anything else. But you need to make that first move, take that first step in your behavior, and then you'll see the floodgates of heaven will be opened, and you'll receive much more than what would be commensurate with your behavior. Those blessings will come. But the blessings are not freebies. The blessings are not just because. The blessings are when you continue in the path that I have set for you. Okay. Let us take a look. The first half of the Ramban, it's a long Ramban, but I'm not going to go through the first half of it. You can do it on your own if you'd like. Turn to the bottom of page 56. Let's use the last little bit of time in this last piece of the Ramban. On page 56 in your blue Ramban sheet, so the last non-bolded paragraph there begins, Ramban now turns to the second phrase of the verse, which was concerning the fatness of the earth. So what did the pasuk say? What did Yitzhak bless him with? May he give you the fatness of the earth. Meaning, what does it mean, the fatness of the earth? What does that mean? The fattest means the most fertile of all lands, namely Eretz Yisrael, that you should be blessed with Eretz Yisrael. So now here the Ramban is saying something significant, that even though the overt words of the blessing do not refer to the blessing of the land of Israel, contained within the words, may you be blessed with the fatness of the earth, was a reference to the fattest part of the earth, the choicest piece of land of the earth, which would be the land of Israel. It is indeed, as says Ramban, quoting the pasuk, the splendor of all the lands, the verse in Yechezkel, from Ezekiel, so that the Ramban does see a hint of the blessing of the land in here, even though it is not overt. Ramban then cites the Ibn Ezra's interpretation of the words of Mital and Mishmanei, of dew and of fat. The Rabbi Avram says that the prefix of let's go back to the next paragraph. Yitzchak's blessings to both Yaakov and Esav included of the dew of the heavens and of the fatness of the earth. Now again, we're working through the original blessing, but the second blessing he's going to give to Esav is also going to include dew and fatness. So asks the Ramban, were these blessings identical? And if they were, how could Yitzchak promise both fatness and dew to two different people? Esav had said, didn't you save anything for me? He said, no, I gave it all to your brother. Nothing? Okay, fine, I'll give you one thing. May you dwell in the fatness of the earth. That's what you gave to Yitzchak. You already gave that bracha to Yaakov, says the Ramban. To Esav, however, Yitzchak did not give the dew and fatness as a gift of God. It didn't come from Elohim, and it didn't come in abundance. Rather, he said, as it were, I have reserved a blessing for you as well, after that of Yaakov, namely, that the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heaven shall be your dwelling, implying, as long as you dwell there, but not longer. Meaning, he thus hinted to him that he would one day disappear and perish. Nevertheless, as long as he is still alive, his portion would be good. So that the Ramban sees a hint that when he gives a bracha to Esav, as long as you dwell there, you will receive the blessings that Yaakov got of the dew and of the fatness. Meaning, your dwelling in the land will be blessed. But you're not going to receive that dew and the blessings from God, meaning wherever you go, you will have it. It will be limited to while you are there. And now this hint is a harsh hint, considering that in the last 3 minutes, Yitzchak just went from thinking this was his beloved son Esav, and all of a sudden, everything flips on its head, and it's not quite the way that he thought it was. And we'll see in Rashi, he'll have a moment of clarity of understanding who Esav really is. And within that moment, he switches his blessing, and he says, you'll have dew and fat, but the dew and fat will be sort of temporary, and that eventually it will end and you will perish and disappear from the land, which will be the end of days at a certain point. We'll get back to that Mirtz Hashem when we get to Asa's actual blessing. But let's leave it at that, and we will pick up with the back half of his blessing to Yaakov Mirtz Hashem next week. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.